I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The Treehouse, episode 27, Room Service, with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Very good morning to everybody. Here we go again with another 3 hours of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity. Actually, there is a little rouge tinge to some of these. We never try and carbon date these. There's no point. We don't know when you're listening to them. Yeah. Don't look at us like that. You know, we don't take that much interest. But we of course, are at the beginning of a phase in the world, which is at the moment in crisis. So there's no problem. But we never mention that word normally because we look up, not down.
We are topically...
We are timeless, not topical. But it has to be said, we're sitting here in this airless pod... And Peps and I have been eyeing each other with wild surmise. Mm-hmm. It's like the final scene of John Carpenter's The Thing in here. Is it you? How about you? How are you? I'm fine. Don't look at me like, how are you? It is.
I notice this is very, very chilled in here, and I think it's to detect any bead of sweat that breaks out upon a brow.
I thought it was your mood. But it is the end of The Thing, of course. John Carpenter's The Thing, when he goes, looks like it's just you and me left, then. One of us could be infected. And he goes... Looks like we're going to find out. And the camera just lifts away in that Antarctica winter in 1982. John Carpenter's The Thing. But that's not our thing at all.
Nope.
This is more our speed. And a very, very good morning, as I say. So, last time we mentioned wills. You've got a thing on wills, haven't you?
But, yes, and we got a caller too.
I'm the eye that never sleeps. I leave here and immediately try to find out stuff. So about these, three wills. These are three great wills, 1871. S. Sanborn, Hatter. That's all we know about him. He left his body to science. Oh, this is sorry, I'm starting off on rather a macabre turn here today. But listen to this. His last will, he left his body to science, bequeathing it to Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., then Professor of Anatomy at Harvard. I said, we've given people a lift, haven't we, already?
Yeah.
I don't want to go in because...
Oh, this is historical, it's fine.
Having spent 28 weeks lambasting the Fred and Rose West tapes, I'd hate to think. Maybe that's it. We've got the spores within us. It's come through the studio walls, and we are now incapable of light entertainment. we're talking about pestilence and stuff. That happens with podcasts. We started off, and now we're curdled.
I do like that when he left his body to science, he said who was going to get it.
Yeah, well,
I'm not leaving this to science, I'm leaving this to scientist.
You wait to see how specific this fella gets. S. Sanborn, Hatter, 1871. He stipulated that two drums had to be made from his skin.
Oh.
I told you, I know. But not only that, but every June the 17th at dawn, he told his friend Warren Simpson to drum out the tune of Yankee Doodle on him. I know. Anyway, the point is he did. He said to his friend, I mean, Hunter Thompson famously was shot into space. His ashes were shot into space. But the idea, you're going to say, well, I'll tell you what. I mean, it is grim, yes. Make a drum out of me and play Yankee Doodle. walking up and down.
What would be your tune of choice?
I think the Max Wall one. It'd have to be the... And I would command everyone who knows me to do the Max Wall thing on my birth. Now, that is immortality to me. That's immortality. The fact that his friend... And, of course, his friend, when he said, what? He said, when I'm gone, I want a drum made of us, and you have got to play Yankee Doodle every day on... What date did he specify? On June the 17th. And his mate went, yeah! His mate couldn't wait. But anyway, that's one, Will, and I'll pepper them through the show. No pun intended there, Lou. But the other thing which we've got to celebrate before we start the show, any second now, of course, is it's the day that Halley's Comet was... they thought it was the first record of it, but then they went back through some monks' journals and found out, in fact, it was the 12th time it had been recorded. But they quite rightly, because it comes around once every 75 years... Yeah. They didn't know it was Halley's Comet again. Who does? I don't know how they fell into...
When did we last have it?
86.
I was going to say, I remember it happening. I don't remember much of it.
I remember saying to... Bonnie was three. We're going to stay up tonight and I'm going to show you Halley's Comet. And we didn't. I remember because my dad woke me up for the moon landing. He woke me up and took me downstairs and made, said, so I thought that would be Bonnie's. She was nearly four. And I'm going to wake you up tonight and it may never happen again. I've never said we're going to watch this. And we didn't. And next morning I said, oh, I forgot to wake you up. It was Halley's Comet last night, wasn't it? And it's not going to happen again till 2061. And I'll be honest with you, Peps, I'm not going to be here in 2061. You might.
You may.
No, I'm not. How am I going to
be a pioneer?
I will be 103, something like that. 104.
That's not impossible.
No, Pep, how old are you going to be?
We'll still be here.
Yes, anyway.
I'll be about 80.
Let me just read you a couple of things and then start the show. Let's do this. Here we go. Right, Halley's Comet, in the year 607, they said, hang on, that came around 75 years ago. And well done them. They were the first people to identify that happens every 75 years. It's going around Neptune at the moment.
Oh,
you don't think it's out there just legging around, going around like an Uber. But there it is. It's round in the... and it says it's due here again in 2061, although, of course, you can expect delays. It's got a lot of water on it. But I read this morning, it's a different kind of water. What does that mean? I read that. Well, don't leave me hanging. What do you mean, a different type of water? A different... Then it's
water
not...
is H2O. So
yes, it is.
If it's not H2O, then what... It's not water, then, is it?
This is when you need... What's his name? Professor Brian Cox.
Yeah.
You can't get a straight answer out of Brian Cox, so you can't. Well, you see, what it is, what we know about the substance on it, it is water, but in fact it forms the shape of farmyard animals, if you tread it, that kind of thing. But he's tremendous, tremendous intellect, but his sense of wonder, I find, sometimes he just sees it as nuts and bolts. Anyway, Mark Twain wrote, I came in with Halley's Comet in 1835, and next year I expect to go out with it.
Oh.
And he did.
Oh, that's
he
charming.
He did, isn't it? That's a beautiful thing. By the way, and that meteor shower we have every October, you know that one? I saw it in Portugal once. I didn't bother it. I let it, have pieces eaten in the restaurant. And but that's Halley's Comet. That's fragments of Halley's Comet.
I was going to say, do we know how people know how big...
It's shaped like a mushroom. It's not like a comet.
Oh.
I saw bits of it this morning. It looked like... not a Cheerio. What's those other ones? Lucky Charms.
Oh, okay.
A giant Lucky Charm. It's a really odd shape, flying around there, leaving remnants over the place like a carpet warehouse. And I say Halley's Comet because it is Halley's Comet. It's like Bill Halley and the Comets. That's how we know. It is. That's why he called the band the Comets.
Well, yes, no.
They were called the Saddlemen. And then somebody said, you've got the same name. And that's how we know it's Halley's Comet because of Bill Halley, who had one eye. Like Rex Harrison or Ry Cooda. Just the one eye. Yes, it is. Originally was the silver yodel of Bill Halley. He billed himself.
Silver yodel.
Three wives, 10 kids. Died at the age of 55. He always looked 55, Bill Halley. Never saw Halley's Comet, though. Anyway, let's where we go. What you got over there, Pep?
Well, we'll do the subjects. Yeah. Number one, when children pack their own case. More on that shortly.
Uh-huh.
Number two, what did you later find out about your neighbours?
Uh-huh.
Number three, odd reasons to dislike a song. And number four, wrongly assuming you've been robbed.
So any of those subjects all remain open. If you're listening now, get in on those. I want somebody's neighbours one. Surely people live next door to someone say, do you know, he's the King of Belgium's brother? That sort of thing. That's what I want. And once they've moved out, you find something. Michael Caine's 87 today. 87?
Gosh.
How can Michael Caine be 87? You ever met?
I'm thinking this through. No, because when TFI did him, you went to him, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been quite a few times, to be fair.
No, I don't think I have.
Can I tell you something? And we're going to start. And I know, we should save these for when we've got to. We can't come into work and just stockpile these. Remind me later on, say, tell us about Michael Caine. When the show starts to flag.
All right.
So now then. No, when the show starts to flag, say, tell us, because I've got various Michael Caine stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all apposite and entertaining.
Okay.
So give us something from over there, Peps.
Well, this is from. Oh, let's do this nice long one.
So Michael Caine came up to me and off you go.
I'm going to give you a long one. I was debating to go long or short.
Why not?
We're going to go long. We're going to go with Vince. On the subject of being chased by animals.
That's good.
I was holidaying in the south of France and was nearly savaged by wild boar. Not one, but a herd.
Ooh.
Staying in a lovely villa on a hillside, my travelling companions laughed at me one evening when I said I could hear grunting noise from outside, just below the kitchen window. They all laughed it off until a few days later we dined in the local town and inquired about pigs or wild boar. Oh, loads of wild boar in the area, said the waitress. Are they dangerous, I asked, as we were walking home to the villa. Oh, she came home with them to the villa, it seems. Our waitress replied. Oh, no, as we would be walking home. Right, OK. Well, they killed someone last year,
wow.
She said.
Oh.
Well, they ran into the road and their car swerved and hit a tree.
I like the light laugh in your voice as you described the demise there. Go on.
Well, she was a bit extreme there. We walked back to the villa and no sight of them and didn't see any for a few days. A few days later, I took a walk to a nearby villa about a quarter mile across the hill to ask if we could use their swimming pool. Walking back to the villa,
What? That's inside, isn't it?
Apparently that they were sort of part of the same owners.
I'm sure the story's going to leave us all with a good feeling. But I've been in some pretty good places and I always look over, and I've been in villas and you look and think, see next door, brilliant, it can't be for hire because it's too good. Wouldn't think for a second.
Stroll over.
Have you used your pool? We've got one, but that is side. Go and knock on the door. What would you say to someone? Hello, we're seeing your villa. Can we use your pool? No, you can't. You know, coronavirus or not, you're not getting in our pool, though. It's making some kind of miasma, some kind of soup. Anyway,
well,
sorry,
Pep. Off went Vince.
Yeah.
Walking back, the evening was drawing in, and as I just caught sight of our villa, I heard a... Not one, but a whole herd.
Brilliant.
I quickened my step and couldn't see where they were coming from, but they were getting closer. I moved to a slight jog. The grunting was getting nearer and from all sides like a pincer movement. Now I was running and a herd was behind, to the side and ahead of me. I was being hunted down by wild boar. They were running alongside me and towards me, then darting off. I was calling at the top of my voice for my friends in the villa to save me, to no avail. I like that bit.
Help, yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, why don't you jump in the pool? Oh, sorry, no, we don't let you use it.
After what seemed like an eternity, I reached the veranda to see my friends all sitting around relaxing with glasses of wine. Help! Wild boar are chasing me, they're after me. As they went to look, the boar ran off into the undergrowth and were never seen again. My friends still don't believe I was nearly savage.
Yeah, no, they will do that, the wild boar, particularly if they can hunt in packs like that. Did I ever tell you when...
Maybe they were set on them by the owners of the one with the pool.
Exactly. Release the boars. Hang on. That sounds like Five Live. Anyway, I know. It's from Love. I know. Five Live's new strap face. Five Live. Release the boars. Well, it's her own fault. Anyway, we were in Norfolk once. I think it was my 50th. How about that? We went and stayed in a very remote windmill. in Norfolk. Oh. Yeah, we did. And it is remote as well. The old sat nav just shows it as.
How chitty bang bang off you.
It really was. It's a great place. I'll give you the address afterwards. Mm. I'd mention it, but, you know, one doesn't want the wrong salt. Anyway, we were standing, but it's in a really cut off part of Norfolk on the river. Obviously, it's beautiful, beautiful. River Yare, I think. Anyway, I took the Land Rover, which you've got to have to get to where this is, driving over many cattle grids. And the next morning we got up, we said, let's drive into the near village and get some stores. And I got about 30 seconds away from the windmill. We were all in the car. And all these cows started to walk towards us. Lots of them. And one stood right in front, so I came to a halt, and it's the worst thing I could have done, because now all the cows got round the car. And they wouldn't move. And I'm talking about 40 cows in a Land Rover. And one of them mounted the bonnet of the car. Mounted it. I mean, got up with a hoof. And I was trying to, because the kid's quite young, going, what should I do? So I sounded the hooter a few times. Nothing. And then I put on some show tunes. I opened the sunroof and put on some Broadway show tunes.
Hello, Dolly, we'll sort this out.
I promise the cows seemed to find it okay. I didn't know what I was going to do. And they started rocking the car. And Wen's looking at me, and in the back, Mancy was quite. She goes, Dad, I'm saying, I know. I thought, what are we going to do? They're going to crush the car. They're going to crush the car. We're going to have a bovine end. And what I had to do, the dad thing, I thought, I'm going to force this door open. I don't care if this... And I pushed the door open, and all the cows walked away. And they all kind of formed
into... They were all front.
They all sort of shaped up over here. And so I got back in the car, and we gently went around them, and then we saw what had happened. Another Land Rover, almost identical to ours, was coming across the field from the other way, and it was the farmer with their feed.
Oh.
And they'd seen the Land Rover and all gathered around it. And
breakfast.
When opened the door, they all shaped up. Yes, and they tucked in napkins.
Oh.
And that's what it was. Anyway, again, we've asked you to send emails, and all I do is pull stories out of the bag. I'll do a very quick one here. This is... Well, it is an animal-related story. We don't only do that, but this is from Brendan. In one of the long, hot summers of the 70s, I was in the Odeon Cinema Purley. This is the strangest thing you've ever seen in a cinema or theatre. I don't recollect the name of the film I was watching. Anyway, the cinema had been recently converted into a multiplex, and I was downstairs in the old part, and just in front of the screen, there was a small platform, probably just big enough for a person to walk across. In each corner of the cinema, there were two emergency exits, and these were open to do with the heat. It was very hot, and they were allowing some kind of airflow. About a third of the way through the film, a fox entered stage right, trotted across in front of the screen, and he, or possibly she, then paused exactly mid-screen and marked the territory. The audience laughed, and there followed a scene worthy of Max Sennett. The fox made its exit stage left, pursued by ushers and cleaners, and the film was stopped and clean-up duties were performed. We were all cheered up. But even once the film started again, the pervasive heat made the smell of fox odour unmistakable. How about that?
Oh,
never mind
and fox war.
Never
fox
mind your 3D. That's a lot of fun. That's an extra if you go to see a film. Is somebody on the phone? Anyone on the phones?
Yeah.
I always look round and shut up. We've got somebody on the phone. I look through and there's two people with their arms folded, shaking their heads. Something from over there, Peps. What you got?
Well, this is brilliant. So, Stephen in Broxbourne. So someone, this is old Rotten Hat, an emailer mentioned that anyone a bit dodgy was known to her as Charlie Harry, reminding me of my dear old Nan, who is 101 and still going strong. When she sees a police car pass by, she says, "There goes Charlie Harry," but she can't remember why.
Oh.
Here we go. Now, this is peculiar, because what he's about to say, I was going to tell a story about.
Go on.
Incidentally, if you want to start a 10 on unusual jobs your nan had, can I get the ball rolling with my nan, who for a time in the 60s was a condom tester at the London Rubber Company?
Oh, well, go on.
I had as a topic unusual jobs your grandparents did, or jobs your grandparents didn't know what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
My nan and granddad, my dad's parents, when they retired, needed a bit of cash.
Mm-hmm.
My mum's just sent me the details. So they worked for the London Rubber Company, packaging up condoms but didn't know what they were.
Come on.
They didn't. But they told them that they employed OAPs because they wouldn't nick them.
That part of it I can get. But the idea...
Grandad had grown up in the poor East End and was married when the war started and did not know what that says.
I think...
He was a very gentle man, my granddad.
My nan
was very proper.
I don't for a second doubt, you know, degrees in gentility. But that's the sort of thing nans and granddads do. You know what you do... Oh, I don't even know what they are. Yeah.
Just a job at the lunch.
And then when you leave the room...
Alongside Stephen's nan.
And then when you leave the room, she nudges him and goes, "Yeah, you don't know what they are, bleeding hell, couldn't keep a straight face there." Well, what was she supposed to say? How about that?
OAPs, because they wouldn't nick them.
That is the perfect part of that. So Michael Caine's 87. I don't even know what they are. He doesn't even know what they are.
You feel we've pulled the emergency Michael Caine cord?
No, because I just looked at it, I've written that. He shares a birthday with Queen Cornaro of Cyprus. Now, Queen Cornaro of Cyprus, I'll just throw this in. In 489, she was the last queen of Cyprus. And do you know what she did? She sold Cyprus to Venice. She went over to Venice and said, "A Queen of Cyprus." Oh, we quite admire that. And Venice, of course, was an independent nation then. And over dinner, she sold Cyprus. Have a look it up. Queen Cornaro, last Queen of Cyprus.
No wonder her name died out. And mud.
How much money must you have got for selling Cyprus? Now, I don't know how it fell under Greek, or some say Turkish, care after that. But...
And we got a hand in there as well with Cyprus.
Well, yes, we did, of course. And that's where Alban Moore was eventually mortally wounded. So, but Queen Cornaro, I like looking at birthdays, and I looked it up, and it said, the last Queen of Cyprus who sold Cyprus to... And I thought, what? What? That's succulent. Is there someone there now?
Stephen's on the line.
Hey, Stephen. It's getting like a seance. Can we get... we've had
good morning, Candyman.
Good morning to you, my friend. And bless you. Loud and clear. That's how we like it. Stephen, Michael Caine's 87 today. 87, Michael Caine. That's something, ain't it?
Yeah, it's fine.
87. Alfie, 87. Alfie's got no... that and... I think Diary of a Mad Housewife, the only two films that literally start cold. He's in the car with Millicent Martin, if you remember, Alfie.
Oh, yes.
And he gets out and he goes, "Now, I suppose you think you're going to see the bleating titles now. Well, you're not, so relax." That's the opening of Alfie. How brilliant is that? Steve, why are you tugging our coat? What's the story?
Well, good morning, Candyman, and good morning, Lou.
My friend.
I heard you talking about fish in cars on another podcast of yours with Mr. G. Lincoln.
Oh, yes, the football one, yes, which is probably suspended now.
The wonderful tale about Gazza, I think when he was at Rangers, was it?
Yes,
fish in McCoy's car.
Yes,
it reminded me of something that happened to me when I was a management trainee in a large supermarket chain.
Oh, yeah.
In the very early 1970s. Should we just say good food costs less?
Hang on,
it's a test, right?
I couldn't possibly say. But I can't possibly say. Yes, of course it is.
Okay, it's Sainsbury's. Okay, no, because there's a couple gone out of business. David Greggs. David Greggs used to be a big supermarket chain, David Greggs.
Fine Fair.
Look at Fine Fair. Summerfield. All of these. Good food costs less, yes.
Good food costs less. So I was trainee manager, and I've been a trainee manager for about 14 months of about an 18-month period. And I was working in a store in Warwickshire for a guy who we'll call the superstar manager, because that's what he told us he was. There's nothing like conceit, is there? So he took great pride in telling us what his future looked like and how he was going to make the senior ranks. And to be fair, he was quite young and he was running quite a big high prestige store. Anyway, one Saturday afternoon, he'd recently bought a new car and it was probably less than a week old. Most of us hadn't seen it, and he brought it in and he put it on the loading bay and he instructed me to get one of my guys to get it clean. I think it was
your job?
Okay, well, we should have called this episode That's Some Side, because we just heard, you would have noticed it, somebody who was on holiday and saw a villa with a nice pool and they decided, should we go and see if we can use their pool? That's some side. But this fella, he's a manager of a supermarket, clean my car. What?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think now, being a little older and more mature, I think the whole purpose was to showcase his car to everybody in the store, all the staff, because it was in a very prominent position and was being cleaned.
Did the phrase "clean it, you bleed yourself" not? Or as my old man would have done it, "Would you clean my car? I'll clean you in a minute." That's the way. That's the correct response to that. Anyway,
we go back to the 1970s. This guy was in charge of my pay and rations.
Yeah, I'll pay and ration you in a minute.
So my forelock was well tugged.
All right.
And but with some disdain, as you might imagine. Anyway, long story short, so we started to clean this car, mm-hmm. which was virtually brand new, didn't really need cleaning, but was brought into the loading bay for the purposes of exhibition, we think, mm-hmm. to make him look even, to build up his reputation even further. Mm-hmm. One of my more senior colleagues came into the loading bay area, and he was actually quite irritated by this, thought this was serious managerial abuse of privilege.
Mm-hmm. Sounds it.
So he disappeared, and he came back a couple of minutes later with a packet of frozen kippers.
Right, could you just stop there one second? Frozen kippers, carry on.
Which he then inserted a couple of very small holes into with a Stanley knife, mm-hmm. and disappeared into this car, mm. and reappeared without them. Mm-hmm. What followed was the most excruciating 6 weeks or so of having a secret and not being able to share it with the victim.
And the stench was noticeable, I take it, was it?
Well, yes, it was rather bad. It was a sort of incontinent, rough sleeper. Very unpleasant. Let's bring it above the waist.
Yeah.
But it was very, very unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And so this car was probably 2 or 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
And was now smelling very, very unpleasant and was driven virtually everywhere with the windows open.
Mm-hmm.
And he then decided to take it back to the dealer where they gave it a full service.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the smell was probably something to do with the glue that had been used to secure the upholstery.
Well, it wasn't much of a service. Well, we didn't find a bag of kippers.
Glue.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll come to that. None of us knew where they'd been concealed, as you will hear later.
Yeah.
So they looked over the car, they cleaned the car, and they returned it with some long-lasting air freshener.
Mm-hmm.
But after a few days, it started to smell considerably worse.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, he went then back to the dealer.
Yeah.
So the owner, the superstar manager, went back to the dealer, not having, you can imagine the finger wagging and all that, not having this. So they took the car off him, gave him a replacement for a while, and they took all of the interior of the car out.
Yeah.
And then they replaced it all with brand new interior.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the dashboard and headlining.
This is like the French Connection. No, in the French Connection, they know that car has got heroin in it, and they cannot find it, and they take it all to pieces, and Gene Hackman sits there, and he goes, "It's in there somewhere." They say, "Come on, man. Popeye, there's nothing in this car. We've taken everything off it but the rocker panels." And he goes, bang, and they take the rocker panels. So was there heroin in the kippers in the car?
That after they had completely replaced the interior,
mm-hmm.
it continued to smell.
Cut to the end. What do we got? How did he find out and what happened?
Eventually, we had to put... Now, remember, this has gone on for about 5 or 6 weeks. There's about 10 of us in the know.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is mentioning it at every occasion.
Come on, what happened?
Yeah. He brought it back to be cleaned again.
Mm-hmm.
We had to find Mark, and Mark dived into the car.
Yes.
Because he was the only person who knew where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And he fished out the kippers, which had been placed on top of the heater matrix.
Oh!
Now, I don't know where a heater matrix is, but it's...
Well, it's a heater box in the car.
And what about...
above the dashboard.
These wretches at the showroom, they didn't think about that, because I'm thinking now, if I ever start to import heroin into Marseille, if nobody ever looks there, you're tipping the wink to it. Now, and did he ever find out, the fella?
I don't believe that he ever did, and about 3 or 4 months later, I was promoted and followed him to another store.
Well, that showed
where
you.
He continued his superstar manager role,
wow.
But with me in a supporting role.
But it'd be in his clothes, it'd be embedded in him, it would be like, trying to get the smell of... When I was born, I'll tell you this, Steve, and bless him at the story, when I was born, those are the first words I heard in the world, and I mean this, but I was born at home in a council flat in Deptford, 51 Congress House, and I was born at home on a Saturday morning, and my mum was convinced I was going to be a girl, and she had the name Susan ready, and when Nurse Walker Dean, Steve, Nurse Walker Dean delivered of me, 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, June the 22nd, 1957, and I was a fairly easy birth, apparently, but she said to my mum, Mrs. Baker, it's a boy, and my mum said, I don't care if it's a box of kippers, just give me something to take them, and that's the first, if anyone knows the first words they heard in the world, bless you, Steve. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. That is the first word I heard in the world. What you got there, my friend?
This is wrongly assuming you've been robbed.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've all been here, Jonathan. My wife worked at Manchester Airport in the mid-90s and worked very early shifts. One morning, she woke me with a scream at 4 a.m. The car's been stolen right off the drive. Call the police. I blearily rose and dialed 999, explaining carefully make, model, where it was parked, when we last saw it. And just as I hopped back into bed, my wife shouted up from outside, oh, we say, OK, I found it. I parked it on the road behind the hedge. Bye! Leaving me with no option but to redial 999 and explain the car had been found, while the operator said, so they stole it and drove it 10 yards and then abandoned it, did they? Never again.
Everybody, I mean, honestly, everyone's done that. I've stood in car parks many times and said, it's just not here. It's just not here. Oh, there it is. Sorry. Yeah. Everybody can do that. This is rumours about teachers, which we've got to be careful of. Not sure if this is from our friend Adam. Not sure if this fits into any existing categories. But a recent email about eccentric teachers reminded me of rumours that circulated our school. That's good. Rumours at school.
Yeah.
A disciplinarian head teacher was apparently a member of the Territorial Army. And the rumour went around that he once lost a tank. There's no more to it than that, but he said he lost a tank. However, there was an equally strict head of upper years who always wore polo neck jumpers. This was supposedly because he had an upside-down crucifix tattooed on his Adam's apple as part of his satanic beliefs. Neither of these rumours may have had any substance, but everyone knew them. And that came after a teacher who walked with a limp that everyone believed is because he took a bullet to the rear end. We've got to do an advert. Now do me a favour, Peps, while we go to the advert.
Mm.
Here's my Michael Caine story. Put it behind that piece of glass with a little hammer and say, break glass in case of emergency. We'll be right back.
Also from Something Else.
Mel Gedroych is quilting. Listen to Mel and good friend Andy Bush as they learn a great new skill and tell some brilliant stories, all whilst having some good, wholesome fun.
In a nutshell, I took a pair of scissors and I went into my husband's wardrobe. Now, this comes from a shirt that I bought him that I know he doesn't like. So I'm testing him by...
this is brilliant.
Yeah, by finding out when he discovers...
Amazing.
..that the shirt has got a big patch out of the back of it.
Wow, and which area of the shirt is this taken from?
Bottom right.
OK.
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all good podcast apps.
What you got over there, Peps?
We've got When Children Pack Their Own Case.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a favourite from Michael. Back in the early to mid-70s, my dad worked for Shell and we lived in Doha, Qatar.
Oh.
We used to fly back to the UK and Holland a few times a year, and I had a little brown case covered in stickers collected from places we'd visited.
Beautiful.
one does that anymore, do they? That I used to carry on plane journeys with things to do and play with on in airports and on planes. Usually the usual, colouring books, books to read, etc. However, one time as we were leaving Qatar, I decided to take my cowboy holster with two pistols, which were cap guns. I packed them in my case, and this was only discovered at security at the airport.
You see, the cap gun thing, Gary Lineker.
I was going to say, you were discussing this earlier in the week.
The addictive smell of caps. Hang on, let me write that down. That's a good name for an autobiography.
Of course, the security people spotted them on the X-ray screen and asked us to open up the case. My parents were a little surprised to see two guns in there and explained that they were toys, and as I had some cap rolls in the case, they showed them how they worked. After a bit of discussion, I was not allowed to take them with me in my case. However, they were given to the pilot to look after during the flight, to be returned to me wherever we landed.
Oh.
I like the thought of the pilot.
In more innocent times in the 70s when hijacks used to go to Cuba, and there was never any suggestion of anything stronger than that, and planes regularly used to get hijacked to Cuba, take this plane to Cuba. Mad magazine often had that. If somebody had tried that with him, the pilot could have turned around, and then, of course, in a sketch, a little flag would have come out with bang on. I would love one of those guns.
I've got one somewhere.
Not with a bang flag.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I do.
What do you mean you've got one somewhere? Bring it in.
I nicked it from the prop cupboard.
Did you?
Yes.
I've never seen one in real wild.
Swipe things off my desk.
I've never seen one
I'll
in the
bring
wild.
It in. Oh, where is it?
Only in cartoons. Mm. There's a factory somewhere making guns that when you pull the trigger, the flag
fabric,
it drops
weighted.
Down.
It's
yes,
weighted.
Of course it has to be.
And you have to roll it up, fold it back in. There's just a little clip. It's very simple mechanism. It's lovely.
Well,
I'll bring it in.
I feel like I've wasted half my life now.
On hand. I've just written on my hand, gun.
Yes, you have.
That's
yes, you have.
Wise idea.
And there'll be a photograph of that to accompany the show.
We've got Luke on the line.
Well, wait there, Luke. There will be 2 seconds. These are songs that you have taken an irrational dislike to or might have a notable reason. Let's bring Luke on. Hey, Luke.
Hi, Danny.
Hello, Luke. I'm just going to read this, Luke, and join in if you like. We can think about a song. You can bring a song you have an irrational dislike for. This is from our friend Mark. There are two songs I dislike. The first causes deep melancholy. The second provokes panic. Up and Away by the Fifth Dimension was sung to me by my dear old Gran when I was 3 or 4. This always provoked uncontrollable floods of tears.
Oh.
I don't know why she chose this unusual lullaby, but she was an eccentric woman. At 83, for example, she once spent a day pretending to be French. She was always cagey. I was always cagey afterwards, after listening to Up and Away. And even today, I still don't like to be around balloons. I think it's not so much the sudden detonation. I like firework night. I always imagine balloons sailing away forever, out of sight, lost, gone. I later grew up to be Nick Drake. That's what he's written. Sorry, Luke, we're coming right to you. The second song is anything off Neil Young's Trans album. Now, I like Neil Young, and I can take any amount, even the god-awful Arc Weld, but I could never stomach Trans, and neither could my pal Ross. When he played Trans, a series of unfortunate events plagued his life that are too serious and tedious to go over here. The LP is evil, it's malignant, it is powerful. He subsequently, and I believed, the only way to rob this album of its evil hoodoo was to immediately touch a copy of Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde straight after hearing it. Granted, Trans isn't played much nowadays, was it ever? But even a mention of its dread moniker is enough to let the juju free. If you read this out, you'll cause a scuttering in my special room where the vinyl is kept, much to the chagrin of the long-suffering missus. Thank you very much indeed, Mark, and there's plenty in that. Some LPs, some items can contain evil.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you another time about that. Anyway, Luke has been good enough to sit there and indulge that. The doctor will see you now, Luke. What have you got for us, my friend?
I've got things left in a will, Danny.
A thing left in a will? Oh,
yeah.
I hope the signal remains strong. At the moment, it's a little murky. You've had things...
Okay.
Yes, it is. You've had things left in a will. The only person I've ever met or heard of who's actually had this. Go on, my friend.
Okay, so growing up, my dad was a keen builder of wooden things. Apart from swings, a treehouse, converting a couple of vans into motorhomes. He also built a 29-foot steam launch and, from memory, a 12-foot sailing boat.
He built a 12-foot sailing boat?
He did indeed, yes. He did indeed. Many hours spent avoiding his children.
And he built this in the shed, I take it, because Buster Keaton and Laurel and Hardy both built theirs in the house and couldn't get it out. this man is a craftsman, to say the least, yes?
He is indeed, yeah. In fact, the only criteria for our child at home was that he had a double-ended garage, which was long enough to build his 29-foot steam launch in. So that's the way it goes. Uh-huh. Anyway, so the sailing boat was what he loved, because he loved to sail. Mm-hmm. So we spent many of our summer holidays, actually all of our summer holidays, sailing in Scotland on the lochs.
How beautiful. How beautiful.
Yeah, indeed.
It is.
Absolutely.
Just before you continue.
I get the feeling Luke would have quite liked to have gone to Benidorm, but okay.
I think it's beautiful. There's a book I'll recommend later that gives the lion the teeth there, perhaps. But one of my favourite moments of Monty Python isn't one of the more well-known sketches, before we continue, Luke. There's a sketch when Graham Chapman's in bed with Carol Cleveland, and he's got his pipe on and he's smoking. She goes, "Well, I'm going to bed now, darling." And he goes, "Yes, me too." And she turns out the light and the screen goes black. And then you hear sawing and hammering, Luke. And in the darkness, she goes, "What are you doing?" And Graham Chapman says, "I'm building a boat." And she puts the light on and he's got this wooden saw. And that's all I remember from it. And you come from that kind of stock. So, all right, there it is. You've got this idyllic, beautiful, beautiful childhood. Go on.
OK, so we'll fast forward many, many years, and my dear father passed away in his 80s after a short illness. Mm-hmm. So it's time for the will and the spoils to be distributed. Mm-hmm. Now, there wasn't a massive selection. I got one of his handmade model trains. He built those as well.
Beautiful.
And I have three brothers and two sisters. One brother was a particularly keen sailor, so it was Matt that got the sailing boat.
Oh, lovely.
All he had to do was go to and collect it, moored as it was, near Plockton, close to the bridge to Skye in Scotland. Complete that task, pretty minor, and he could take it back home to sail with fond memories of childhood, and in his case, adult years sailing with my dad. The only snag in this carefully formed plan was that my brother, Matt, at the time, was working a residence in Dubai.
Oh, okay.
I imagine the boat is still there today, because no one went to collect it.
No! Oh, that is so sad.
No, you rotters!
Oh, you'd let us...
bunch of rotters!
...down a primrose path, and the old man... I'm going to make you feel rotten. I mean,
if anyone lives in Plockton, go and see if you can find a decrepit old...
It's still there. Oh.
I imagine so. No one has any cause to collect it or even knows it's there apart from us.
And what might such a thing be worth? I don't know.
I look on eBay, probably not very much, I would reckon. Hand-built boat by a mad doctor. I'm not sure it's worth that much.
I bet if you went up there, Peps, it's turned into some kind of pop-up bar these days. I hope it's turning a tidy profit.
I thought this would go somewhere where Luke would say, "To us, it's priceless, Dan," but they don't give a fig.
Oh, Luke killing himself. And I bet when the family get together to say, "We're doing that old boat, and it's still up there." I don't know. Davy Jones has got that now. Oh, well, bless you, my friend. I did not see that coming. I'd all my sentimental music ready to go and everything. Thank you very much indeed, Luke. Is he gone? He's gone. Oh, he's gone. I was going to ask him, what happened to the toy train he gave you? Put it in a skip. That is the least... Maybe there's a subject in the least sentimental person in the world, because we just found him. All right, so this is Odd Reasons to Dislike a Song. This is Andy. "I don't so much dislike driving south by the Stone Roses as just find it difficult to listen to. I used to be rather fond of it, but a couple of years ago, I had to have a flexible cystoscopy, which basically involves inserting a camera where no camera should ever go. At a key moment, just before I got to see my own prostate on a TV screen, that song came on the radio. I promise you, now if I ever hear it, I have something of a grim flashback." That's the Stone Roses driving south as well. I know, you wouldn't dream. If you had a script, you'd say, no, too on the nose. What you got there, Peps?
This is from Gail in Colchester. "How my favourite piece of clothing got ruined. 4 years ago, we went camping in Kent with our new Scottish Terrier puppy. Her first time camping and her feisty nature secured us a lovely quiet spot on the campsite. We went out for the day to Margate. I think the children, who love Only Fools and Horses, thought it would be a jolly boys' outing. Mm-hmm. But Margate then wasn't quite as dog-friendly as we had hoped, so often we had to while away out an hour outside a shop or gallery with the dog. As the afternoon turned chillier, I put on my lovely new navy cardigan, which had tiny little silver individual buttons that I had bought for a whole pound from a charity shop. I was thrilled with it. The seven-year-old wanted to go to the Shell Caverns. I didn't know there were Shell Caverns in Margate. I've been to Margate.
Oh, absolutely. What are they?
We only ever went to Benbon Brothers. Shell Caverns.
Shell caverns? Caverns full of shells?
I guess so.
Isn't that where the catacombs and all the... you can see the mummified... No, that's in Rome. Sorry, go on.
Off we toddled, the two of us and the dog. I assumed it would be outside. It wasn't, but the lady owner was happy to let her in through the immaculate shop as long as I carried the dog to the caves. No problem, I thought. The only snag being is a dog won't go for a wee in a new place. I thought this would be okay. As we wandered around the shell caves and into the meticulous shop, and the daughter was... the seven-year-old, didn't say daughter, sorry. Yeah. The seven-year-old had to buy something from the shop. I missed that the dog had decided that she was very much at home now, and now was the time for the biggest and longest wee over a shiny, immaculate fort. There was no stopping her. Oh. With damage limitation, the only way forward to stop the flow towards beautiful baskets of toys and shells, the only thing I had was my lovely new cardigan with the little silver buttons.
Oh, no!
I used it to dam the flow.
No!
I admitted to the lady and she gave me the necessary to clear up and a carrier bag for my prized cardigan. It went sodden in the next bin we passed. My husband still finds it funny to say, oh, that's nice. Wouldn't it go lovely with a navy cardigan with little buttons?
That's rotten. No.
This dog went 30 hours without a wee last week in Sussex on holiday. It's a game of chance.
You know, sometimes the... just as a tip for all our emailers, when you've had one urination reference in an email, I find that the third and the fourth one starts to say, we understand it. The fixation seems to be there, but beautifully told. Before we finish, this is about sleep aid. Do you know the other week I said the A to Z of films I liked.
Yes.
Not my favourite films by any means, but I did this A to Z, trying to get to sleep, inspired by your own A to Z of book you do.
Yeah.
Well, Tim Turner. I'm sure the bane of his life. It does look like Tina when you look down. Tina Turner, of course, is the most famous Swiss in the world. You know, she's Swiss these days.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's Swiss. She's a Swiss citizen. She's 81. She's 81. Here's an Alpine horn. That's Tina Turner on the Alpine horn. That's an album you like, wouldn't it? Tina Turner on the Alpine horn. That's another one, isn't it?
Oh, that's nice.
There's Tina Turner. I hope we get an email about Tina Turner sometime in the next year. And I'll just play that behind it. And only people who listen now will understand why. I can't wait. That's what I can't wait for. Dear Dan, I've got a story here about when me and my wife went to see Tina Turner. Oh, yeah. And we don't mention it. This now is the Tina Turner music. OK. This is from Tina Turner. I do apologise, Tim. I've been pleased to learn in recent episodes I'm not the only one who uses the trick of... I've completely gone, I'm afraid. And there's no coming back from this, I know.
One, two, three, clap! Treehouse! Climb up, go in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away. In the treehouse, the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied. We laugh the day away in the treehouse.
Take it away, Dennis!
Always do, Wisby. She really is Swiss, by the way. Look it up. She really is. She lives in Montreux or somewhere. Anyway, so, Tim, we'll start you with your email next time. Thank you, everybody. And, you know, trying to be a good deed in a wicked world. I hope you're all right out there. That's been Louise Pepper on the other side of the table. Phil Wilding holding it all together with Josh on behalf of something else. But as always, chiefly yourselves. Now, you know what I'm going to do? No, I won't. I won't. I won't.
Next time on The Treehouse, number one, world's least sentimental person. Number two, where were you during earth-shattering events? Number three, notable jobs your grandparents had. And number four, the biggest big head you've ever met.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.